Welcome to the Road to Abundance number 8. So my name is Gordon Mullen. I'm one of EPAM's lead business analysts with an interest in disruptive technologies.
Hi, I'm Govind Shukla. I lead the insurance business analysis and product practice for us in the UK here, and I'm the same.
And it's, as always, we would like to remind everybody that we are part of NGEX. So if you're interested in following up on lots more of the stuff that we talk about here, getting involved with the NGEX community, you can find us on ngex.space, and you can sign up on there for updates and join the GitHub as well. So there's lots of information over there for people to have a look at. So please do come and join us. But we've got a lot to get through today. It seems like each of these episodes, there seems to be more and more to go through. As always, we are going to kick off with our big fish and starting with OpenAI. Now, we know GPT-5 is out. We did talk about this in the last episode, didn't we, Govind? But I gather they've been scoring quite well on an IQ test.
Yep. So basically, the GPT-5 Pro, it scored 123 points on an IQ test.
It's pretty good. I'm not sure it's quite Einstein yet, but
but it is the highest scoring model so far on that test. And I think it's called trackingai.org. So we'll have the link in the description for you to check out.
Yeah, I did have a look at this in a bit more detail, actually, this one, because you can't see the headlines, and sometimes it's worth digging behind the headlines a little bit. Turns out that was averaged over a couple of attempts. They actually got a score of 113 and 116, so it's the average of the two. Grok 4's average currently is 110, but that was averaged over four attempts, where it got 110, 70, 130, 130. So actually, it scored on its highest, the same as what GPT-5 Pro did. So it's not quite as clear-cut as it might appear. So just a reminder to any of our audience, when you do see these headlines, do have a look at the details behind them, because it doesn't always tell the whole story.
Interesting. I think that's very important. Okay, yeah. But anyways, moving on. So we have OpenAI. They've won gold at one of the most world's top programming competitions. It's called the International Olympiad in Informatics.
Oh, yeah. And this one's been around a while, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they've competed in the online AI track of this IOI, and they've took sixth place among 330 contestants. And first, obviously, amongst the AI competitors, beaten by five humans. So there is some hope of humanity at the end of it, Gordon.
Well, for another couple of weeks, anyway. Same conditions, wasn't it, that they were going for?
Yeah. 5 hours, maximum 50 submissions with a basic terminal tool without internet or RAG. So that's quite impressive. To be able to do that without its inherent expertise, which is being able to switch over to search internet or RAG. It's just doing it at the point locally.
Yeah. So basically like humans, kind of, sort of whatever's inside your skull or inside your server rack is all you've got access to. I did, when I was having a look at this, and note that they did field an ensemble of several reasoners for this one, actually, rather than a single model, but none of them were specially trained for the IOI competition. And actually, Cheryl Hsu, HSU, one of the researchers at OpenAI, said the only scaffolding was in selecting which solutions to submit and then connecting to the IOI API. So basically, they were getting the problem, figuring out which of their, run it through several models, figure out which one to do, and then send that result back to the IOI. And just for a bit of comparison, last year they finished just shy of a bronze medal. So to go from a bronze medal to a gold medal this year means they've gone from the 49th percentile to the 98th percentile in just 1 year. So impressive progress.
Ooh, scary days. But I think it's interesting that, because you were saying, read between the lines, maybe this bit of them running the problem on different models and then selecting the best solution to submit is effectively what has led them to have more predictable variation across two tests in comparison to Grok 4, because Grok 4 might be just doing it the old style, just solve it once and just give the answer and was gunning it. But rather, this is more sneaky, trying to have multiple models solve the problem and select the best solution and submit it.
Yeah, because that variability matters. You know, if you imagine if you were talking to a human and one question you ask them, you know, they answer with an IQ of 130, and the very next question you ask them, they answer with an IQ of 70, I suspect that difference is going to be quite noticeable.
quite noticeable for sure. But anyways, if you move on over a bit in terms of the same conversation, OpenAI have now talked about in one of the YouTube videos about a new class of models that'll be focused on long-term thinking. Wow, multi-planetary days with AI. So long-term thinking, basically the systems that can plan, reason, and experiment on one problem for hours or even days. So that's definitely help. That's AGI, right? That's one of the potential problems with the current system, with the attention limits and other aspects of context windows exist, is whether if, and it's almost like a hypothesis, whether it's valuable for a model to spend a lot of time pondering on the same problem, or will it go into a vacuum and come back with more garbage instead of valuable information? So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, perhaps a slight distinction to be drawn between thinking for a long time about a particular question and being able to maintain essentially context, memory, you know, that long-term context, what were the questions and answers I was doing, you know, sort of a few days ago, and how does that affect the questions I'm being asked now? But what they also said was that early glimpses of that approach are also visible in the models that won gold at the IOI. But the end goal is actually, what they're saying is to automate research. So, you know, finding new ideas in medicine or AI safety. But they have obviously acknowledged that this will require far more compute than is available today, hence Sam Altman's willingness to invest in data centers in the coming years. So, yes, I think NVIDIA will have plenty of custom if this is the approach that they're going for.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the approach, I think we discussed this in the previous stage as well, is that research is kind of a funny term if you think about it, right? A lot of research in academia, and that's like one of the failings of academia these days, is the amount of, obviously one thing that has increased the surface area of research, and which means that if you normalize the curve of research that comes out, obviously a lot of it is incremental, which means we look at all the research papers published on the topic previously, then obviously look at bring it to the current stage, have a model that knows everything, have it create a map of a capability view or a concept view. And obviously that map will have gaps, and just pick up those gaps. And that's your new academic research, because nobody has looked at that area. And potentially that's an incremental process instead of a pure scientific from scratch research. That's like a step-by-step creation of a worldview or a map, and then finding gaps to fill in the gaps with potential hypothesis generation. But I think that is, I mean, that is very plausible to be going to models, and then the actual science and actually hitting a big problem and a very complex problem and solving it, obviously with the knowledge of existing research papers, but also then use creative thinking from scratch to solve the problem will still be a human domain, which is a relief to know for now, for this week.
All of it is for now, because as it keeps leaping forwards, the sort of the area that we've got left to stand on and be human, certainly in terms of these kind of intellectual activities, seems to be shrinking by the week, if not by the day. Talking of shrinking things and stuff that's getting displaced, and this is a brand new one out, just came out I think yesterday, Google, who have now released Gemini 2.5 Flash Image, also known as Nano Banana. I haven't yet quite figured out where that particular name came from, but it's image editing, but it does a few things. We've seen, you know, we're seeing a lot of the image models and things being able to do stuff like this, but the quality of what it's outputting is really good from my experience so far with it. So it's allowing you to blend multiple images into a single image. So you can say, well, I want you to combine this aspect from this one and this aspect from this one into the single image. So, you know, for example, putting a product into a particular shot, or saying, you know, I want this character, you know, this photograph of this person to be wearing this t-shirt was one of the examples. Making targeted transformations using natural language, so prompt-based editing. But importantly, it's also using Gemini's world knowledge to generate and edit images. So when you give it a prompt, you ask it to do something, it understands kind of out in the world what that means before it actually then tries to make the edit. So that means it can make some really quite precise prompt-based edits. And they've, in AI Studio, they've got a few different example apps, because this is available through the API. So for example, PixShop, no prizes for guessing what they're going after there. So the image edit, straightforward image editing stuff. They've got a code drawing app, and they've got like Home Canvas. So if you've got a photograph, I think one of the examples is, you know, a bedroom, you can drag and drop a product image of a lamp onto the bedside table. And it doesn't just drag and drop it as is, you know, it spins it around, puts it in the right orientation, sizes it correctly, and turns the light on. You know, so it understands that that's what that image should look like. I've been playing with it actually today, and I don't know whether we'll get this into the show notes perhaps, but you know, I took a photograph of myself while I was out walking the dog, and my wife was with me, and I've got I've got a bit thin on top because of my age, and she said, oh, you know, would you ever consider, you know, just kind of shaving your head if you did start to go bald? So I ran the image through this new Gemini and went, well, all right, show me bald. Didn't quite like that. And then friends suggested, oh, it looks better if you've got a goatee. So, all right, so we had bald and a goatee. And then I thought, right, what can we do? I want you to remove the strap of the dog bag, and I want you to take the glasses off. And I want you to put me in a pink shirt, and I want you to change the sky to be blue with clouds like it is somewhere in the UK, and change the industrial warehouses behind me to trees. And that was my text prompt. And it just did it in a matter of a few seconds. And then I went, Make me happier or more smiley. Give me a big grin. You can see the images. Hopefully the audience will when we publish this episode. You know, make me smile. And it made me smile. Yeah. It's just like, oh my God. You know.
I can see that, you know, when the smiling version of you is a different person for sure.
Yeah, it's slightly changed. Right, it's changed the face shape a bit. That was when it kind of started to drift. But even so.
Yeah, it does a quite decent job. And effectively, I think one thing that's interesting coming out of this is that smile is a very difficult task because everyone has a very unique stump smile. And what it has done, it seems like it has done for the smile bit, is it has taken that smile and used the training data it has to place you to the closest celebrity smile it could find, because that is a typical style of celebrity smiling and comes out of very made up and fake kind of narrative, and it kind of feeds somewhat like that. It's not your natural grin. I think one thing that's quite impressive is the consistency of the objects in the image, and being able to not mess up the narrative. So I think that's what we started to see with some of the diffusion models, being able to kind of be more consistent like that. But it's quite good that I think Photoshop introduced this concept as one of the early ones in this game, where they had quite decent image editing because of they were using some of the early diffusion models. But then definitely we had no doubts that Google will be doing a better job at it, and that's what they've done. Quite decent output. And by the way, you look quite cool at bald as well, so you can give that a go later on. If that is a fallback option.
The problem is the picture I didn't put in there is me bald without the goatee, and I just look really old and tired. So I think it might be quite a long time before I decide to try and being bald. But yes, really good. So definitely worth it. And for reference, that's my
absolutely
normal
grade. Yes. That seems interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, and moving on. So then Google, when we enter the domain, let's look at other stuff. So Google DeepMind have now added Gemini 2.5 Pro DeepThink to the Ultra $200 plan, so which is quite interesting, which means that the model that we're talking about, the Google model, we're talking Olympiads today, so apparently. So the International Math Olympiad gold was went to Google for this specific model, and it's now available. So that's quite an epic thing, right? That, you know, a model that's just didn't exist a couple of months back, yep, is now available for people to use. It's just amazing. That is what's showing you the speed of progress being made. And just for context, it has got a 1 million context and 192,000 token context. It's just, you can imagine. And then it is obviously benchmarked at top 1% level at the HLE, in the HLE, which is 34.8% in humanities last exam. Live code bench, it is doing 86.6, so blowing everything out of the water there. And AIME 2025, it's going 99.2%. So that tells you some story about it.
Yeah. And I think the API is going to get the model in the coming weeks. So if people want to give that a go, we'll drop the link into that or into the announcement for that as well. And final one on Google, they took their autonomous agent Jules out of beta. So it's more like a kind of a ChatGPT codex analog, but it's also powered by Gemini 2.5 Pro. The beta had a 60 tasks a day limit. Now the free plan will allow 15 tasks with three running concurrently. But there's also paid tiers, obviously, which are part of Google AI Pro and Ultra, at $19.99 and $124.99 a month. And the limits have been increased by 5x and 20x respectively. So another way to be using that in agentic AI this time.
Yeah, interesting. I think this is the coding arena that's developing quite a bit. I think if, or from all this AI bubble hype, one thing that's coming out nicely is the IDE development, which is almost like the foundational elements of making it real is coming via IDE improvement. So, and I'm quite enjoying it. And yeah, so I think that this is definitely a good battle to have, even regardless of the hype and the bubble, even if it bursts, it will leave some valuable capabilities in people's hands, which I believe is a blessing in disguise anyway. So moving on to another, when we talk about coding and analysis, another behemoth known for this specific expertise, Anthropic. They have increased the context size to 1 million, obviously. Mm-hmm. When Google has come up with a 1 million context, so can Anthropic.
Yep.
But there is a caveat, though. Anything above 200K context window is significantly more expensive. So it's almost like the magic of the startup world. You tend to see pricing within pricing and different layers and different ways of pricing. Interesting. So because just in a normal curve of requests, you're less likely to get a lot of requests that are about 200K context window. And so basically, which means that majority of the queries or even deeper queries will potentially be cheaper in terms of being able to pay less. But then anything that's above 200K basically will go to five times the cost. So for example, the up to 200K, you only pay $3 per million tokens input and 15 per output. But then you suddenly have to jump to $6 per million input, and it goes again, jumps to 22.5 per million outputs if you are exceeding 200K. And you know, anything, if it's 300K or 900K, it doesn't matter, but then it takes in that kind of detail. I'll be interested, Gordon, to kind of try and research and show some examples to our users in terms of the benefits of this large context window and maybe do a mini benchmark on our podcast.
That'd be good, because it's sometimes difficult to difficult to kind of contextualize what does that look like. You know, what use case would you need for that larger context window? You know, where you're doubling your input costs and
50% increasing your output. Uploading like a 4K video. And asking a question about a really small thing in the background and stuff like that, and then seeing if they can get it correctly. I'm just guessing literally at this point, but I think maybe that could be an interesting one to look at.
Also now, Claude Code has got an improvement because they're now able to auto scan all your code for vulnerabilities. So they've launched security review and GitHub Actions integration. So basically any pull request is going to get auto checked for SQL injections and XSS and data leaks and things like that. So, and basically if something's found, Claude politely flags it and suggests a fix to you. And I think that's definitely something that's needed, because we, well, all the vibe coding and stuff like that, it's all too easy, particularly if you're not experienced in programming, to introduce some fairly hefty security holes. So you do need the systems to be able to spot it and suggest a way to actually fix it.
Yeah, and I think all the people have been, I mean, in my list of best practices that I tell people all the time is to, regardless of which coding agent you're using, make sure you say a few things like, you know, make sure to implement secrets management so that none of the API keys are available on the front end. Because on Twitter, even if you go now, you just search randomly, people have posted screenshots of GitHub where they just search for an API key, OpenAI API key, and there are loads of people have just, because they've just bytecoded, the app literally is a single script with the front and back end, everything in one single view. And it's unfortunately available when you visit their app to be able to go to the inspect element and see the code. So I think these features like these will become table stakes to protect. And this is exactly what I was saying earlier, is that regardless of what happens in this AI hype or bubble, this will be things that, you know, will always become foundational and capability that you will protect you from, you know, jeopardizing yourself and doing something like that. So I think that's quite interesting. At the moment, you have to actually tell the algorithm to, you know, run a DPI check. And, you know, on Google, for example, Firebase Studio, I did that. And Google was able to implement some of the frameworks in there. But it's good that Cloud Code is able to do it on request, which is good. But it has also introduced two new modes.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is called Explain. Now, this agent is will explain its steps one by one. So basically, the idea here is that if you're completely vibe coding it, but it's a large complex application, you tend to become the prisoner of the context window, which means that if you have, for example, 70 different files and you have code working with complex logic colliding with each other, but because of context window limits, you can't explain, or the model can't explain to you exactly how things are dependent on each other. But then this explain model will be able to do that to prevent your project from eating up itself because of the context window limitations, which is quite good. The second mode is called Teach. Okay. This model codes with you step by step. So it's like a pair programming with a mentor, where basically you can choose to see that whether you want to be able to get some feedback on what you're typing, or is it more autocomplete? So you can choose different mechanisms. And then both of them, and basically the teach mode is basically free for everybody. You can everybody can try and see how that works.
Okay, that's good. And final bit on Anthropic, we also found that Web Assistant Claude has got a new memory. So like ChatGPT will remember the past chat. So you can either reference something manually or the bot will find it. So that's going to be another useful aspect for people to take advantage of, because it gets really annoying when it doesn't actually, you know, you've been having a conversation with it, and then the next time you come back to it, it's like you're talking to a new person and they've got no idea what it was that you spoke about last time. So that's definitely going to help.
That's definitely going to help. And now we move to another giant, Meta. So apart from the latest news of them freezing AI hirings, which has been very, very interesting move, and I think this is still materializing, so we'll find out more. But what I read recently, just a strapline of the highlight, that, you know, all these Meta super intelligence AI offers that were roles that were being hired for, all of that is frozen. So it might mean that Meta has finally got the team they wanted and to lock in and work on it, so that there's not a lot of noise around what's going on. But also then, or it might be that they discovered a ceiling of some kind and a limitation or constraint that they can't, you know, work their way through. So it'll be interesting to see how that materializes. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But definitely,
the other possible reason for that is actually they've now developed AGI and they don't need any more humans. I suspect we a bit of a way away from that, yeah. But, you know, it's a possibility.
Yeah, that is a possibility, yeah. And, yeah, they have been up to, they've released their new model called Dino version 3. It's first, it is the first Vision Foundation model that outperforms specialized solutions. Basically, it's a universal open model for detection, segmentation, depth estimation, and dense prediction. And it basically consistently beats all prior foundation models and narrow specialized ones, including the models that are clip-based, which are SIGLIP2 and Perception Encoder. I think it's quite interesting. I think we saw Genie announced, which was able to do some similar thing, but it'll be quite... Because Meta, the main ethos for them, has always been, the augmented experience of VR, AR. So these models definitely seem to be in that ballpark.
Yeah, definitely. And it's trained without labels, so it's self-supervised, because obviously that's always a bottleneck. If you need humans to label stuff, then that's going to slow you down. Dino actually stands for distillation with no labels. So DI from distillation and no labels, so hence Dino. And the core on it is a vision transformer. So the input is a huge image corpus. I think they fed it something like 2 billion plus images, but zero annotations. So again, this, you know, or any time that you can get to a point where you can just feed it data and it can learn by itself, you're going to get those significant increases in capability. You know, we just have to look back to, you know, DeepMind and AlphaGo, you know, when it got to the point where it was just playing against itself. That's where it went past the point of humans being able to beat it.
Exactly. And I think just imagine this 2 billion becoming 2 trillion, but 1.9 trillion of those images are AI generated themselves.
Yes.
It'll be quite interesting So the hackers in the future are not going to be writing code. They're going to be doing real world things that are likely to be not trained already, an algorithm trained on it. That'll be the real world hacker. it seems like sci-fi, but you know, it is like that. You remember in Inception, one of the key things was when you spin the top and it keeps on spinning, you know that you're in a simulation. Yes. It's something like that. Those people will be the real hackers of being able to skip through this 2 trillion, 2 billion or 2 trillion images that some model is trained on, and they create something funny that can trick the model all over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's going to be training data injection that's going to, this already is one of the attack factors. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have NVIDIA. So again, one of the larger, behemoths in the game. NVIDIA Research, they've just made LLMs 53x faster with their new model, new concept, which is Jet Nemotron. It's crazy. I just love the sci-fi nature of the name, Jet Nemotron.
Yeah, sounds like something from kind of 50s sci-fi, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Quite interesting. But I think this technique is called post-neural architecture search, which is PostNAS. Again, a very cool name. I love it. and it's a revolutionary process for retrofitting pre-trained models. So it's like, and this is what NVIDIA's differentiation in comparison to other chip manufacturers like Intel and AMD has been, that, and that's what Jensen Huang, the founder and the CEO, have highlighted quite a few times, that it's not just about the hardware. They are working on the hardware, but also they are working on the software architecture closer to the hardware a lot. And that is their moat. So obviously the hardware, being able to replicate hardware, is a moat, but then being able to have the software architecture that closely interacts with that hardware is a larger moat. So you can imagine 53x speed up, which is like 98% cost reduction for inference at scale, and makes it possible to run state-of-the-art models on memory constrained by edge hardware. So I can tell you by Jet Nemotron, which seems like it's not really a hardware thing. It's more of a close-to-chip software innovation. It is able to 53x. So suddenly if AMD or Intel or others were designing a chip that was, you know, going to improve this in a hardware way, which is more difficult, that they just got blown out of the water because of the intelligence software aspects, NVIDIA has now gained a 53x advantage.
Yeah.
And they're going to just blow everyone out of the water. So, you know, the chip ecosystem is definitely having another type of war apart from LLM ecosystem, which is like almost two different wars now being fought.
Yeah. And we'll come back to NVIDIA later on. And I think actually that ability to run those, you know, big, large models on that memory constrained and edge hardware will tie into a story that we've got a little bit later on when we talk about the robotics side of things. But for the time being, let's move on to Perplexity. So they've been, if you quote from a bit of Monty Python, they've been a very naughty boy. because after customer complaints, Cloudflare investigated, and what they found actually is that Perplexity have been violating long-standing indexing standards. So what they found is that even when sites are explicitly blocking crawling in robots.txt and blocking the official Perplexity bots, the company is apparently still pulling content via crawlers masquerading as a regular Chrome browser. Naughty, naughty. Basically, what happens, the official Perplexity bot comes first, and then if blocked, then Plan B uses the Mozilla user agent plus a constant IP rotation across different networks and even autonomous systems. So they are, you know, very deliberately trying to duck these restrictions that are there. And it clearly violates the robots exclusion protocol, which has long considered being almost sacrosanct. So previously, customers that were caught doing this would blush and apologize and stop. But Perplexity seems to be leaning into this kind of enfant terrible role amongst the AI search players. And consequently, Cloudflare have removed them from the verified bot list and added some block rules, which is available to all their clients, including the free ones. Mind you, they have said this is probably going to be a bit of an arms race. So Perplexity's behavior will likely change after that, kicking off a bit more of a cat and mouse aspect to it. So, yeah, being a bit naughty with that one.
I think, you know, this is the thing, right? I mean, if Perplexity is there to challenge Google, right? That's what they're... the founder Anand has been saying, we are here to redefine search. I think this is the existential fight for them. And being able to crawl other sites, regardless of protocols or sacrosanct rules that people have, I've been telling this on this, I've been talking about in this podcast, Perplexity has been the best search LLM for me and for everybody, I think. And this crawling is potentially the reason why they're doing quite well. So I'm sure Perplexity would be pushing the envelope of the thinking that what's the problem? Or if bots and agents crawl the websites, what's the issue? Yeah. They might be happy to put like a commercial model behind it and, you know, start paying people something, some kind of fee for being able to do it. And I agree with that. Yeah. Like what is, and for Cloudflare, it's existential as well. So you understand that it might have been a conversation had in private between Cloudflare and Perplexity, and it might have happened like that. But then, because in a national equilibrium, both of them stand to lose if the other one wins this thing. Mm. So, for example, if Cloudflare wins, Perplexity can't show high quality search results because they can't crawl. If Perplexity wins, the Cloudflare, what is the point of having Cloudflare? I mean, if bots can crawl all over my website, even if I am protected by Cloudflare, then what's the value proposition of Cloudflare? So it is kind of an existential fight both ways. I am slightly on the side of Perplexity because in future, these restrictive aspects will not fare well in the future because, you know, people will want to be able to do these things to add value. There should be some commercial model around it, but I don't think blocking that completely is a useful thing for the future because, you know, the other competitors in the market, which are not located in the US, which means you know where they are, will not have such restrictions.
Yeah, true. Although having said that, you know, I mean, you know, if you want to be in, generally, you want to be in the indexes. So the stuff that, at least in my experience, the stuff that companies tend to block from crawling is stuff that's either, you know, going to confuse the indexes if it's included, or it's stuff that you don't want, you know, being available just directly through a search result. So I can see some aspect of what you're saying, this thing, but there's usually good reasons for it. And I think Perplexity runs the risk of making themselves quite unpopular by including stuff that companies have said, we do not want you to index this. But nah, yeah, I'll have to wait and see.
Let's wait and see. Yeah. Okay, and then obviously the old news is the new news. We knew that Perplexity had thrown in their hat in the game. They wanted to, they reached out to Google to buy Chrome. The offer still stands. So the offer now is $34 billion. So yeah. they have been hunting for browsers for months. They have already talked to the browser company. They have talked to Brave and the other browsers, which is almost like gives more people more control of their personal data, even use for advertising. They've already reached out to DuckDuckGo. But obviously, it's clear that they want to acquire browser because browsers brings user stickiness and people generally prefer one browser over the other and they stick with it. And that's what Perplexity wants. And almost like this is another domain of Perplexity of increasing their user base. They have gone for the strategy of controlling the roads to get the traffic to them or to their models. So yeah, it's been interesting. The funny thing is, Perplexity's total valuation is about $18 billion at the moment.
Right.
And they're offering $34 billion to buy Chrome. So I don't know, the extra $16 billion worth of confidence.
Yeah.
Where is it coming from?
Where's the money come from? Yeah. Okay. All right. I guess we'll have to see. You know, Perplexity maybe can't afford Chrome, but you know, perhaps somebody like OpenAI might. So I'll have to wait and see what the regulators have to say about all this, because it does get into a bit of a monopoly situation, or as you say, controlling the roads. You don't want any one company having too much influence over what's going on. But if we move on, we've got quite a lot of news from XAI. So the first one being that the co-founder and engineering lead, Igor Babushkin, has left to launch Babushkin Ventures, which is focused on AI safety and unraveling the universe's mysteries. He said the starting point was a dinner with Max Tegmark. And he noted a couple of lessons in this. He said, don't be afraid to roll up your sleeves and dive into the technicals and also maintain a manic sense of urgency. So I'll have to wait and see what Babushkin Ventures comes up with.
And both of these lessons seemed pretty much Elon Musk written on both of them.
Definitely. Definitely. That was kind of what he learned from him. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That both of the points of rolling up the sleeve and getting the detail is what he loves to do. And then again, maintaining manic sense of urgency, that's the typical surges that he does at all his companies every 6 months. So that's like, you know, a good lessons to learn if you are in that high performing ecosystem where you either survive or you get fired. So that's interesting. But XAI launched Grok Imagine with an NSFW generation mode. It is an image to video and a text to image tool available to Super Grok and Premium Plus subscribers on the X's iOS app. I think we have all seen these characters popping up on XAI. It's quite interesting. I think that that Elon does things his way. So obviously it's XAI, this Grok Imagine supports a spicy mode, which allows for a bit of naughty images generated. The idea is that, you know, other competitors don't allow it, but XAI allows it, which is, you know, them being the trailblazer. So we'll be seeing some interesting content all over with spicy mode. And again, the animation styles have aspects of custom, normal, fun, spicy. So, you know, you get the different variations. In the first few days, it has already seen 34 million images generated already. So you can imagine the take-up is quite good. And this is what kind of shows as well, having a platform that control the traffic is so important to drive traffic, drive success to your solutions. And that's the reason why Perplexity, for example, is striving for more users, because none of the solutions yet have seen that kind of adoption so fast.
Yeah. And he's also said that Grok Imagine is now free for everyone worldwide on iOS and Android. So he's lifted that paid subscription requirement that's been present since launch. So absolutely go and give it a go and see what you come up with. We've also had a lot of other announcements from Elon. Well, I'll run through these quite quickly. So 23rd of August, he said the Grok 2.5, which don't forget was their best model last year, is now open source. And Grok 3 is going to be made open source in about 6 months' time. So definitely giving people access to those capabilities. We've got Colossus 2, built by xAI, which is going to be the world's first gigawatt plus AI training supercomputer. So that's obviously in construction at the moment. I think actually Michael Dell had been out to have a visit to that and had been saying some very complimentary things about xAI and Elon and what they were up to. And the final one that did make me chuckle, because this idea has been kicking around for a number of years and people saying it kind of tongue-in-cheek in terms of the naming. But what he said is that xAI is creating a new software company called MacroHard. So what he said is, in principle, given that some software companies like Microsoft do not themselves manufacture any physical hardware, it should be possible to simulate them entirely with AI. A few people have actually suggested they should create a neural operating system called DAWS, where nothing is hard-coded and everything's created on the fly by Grok. So instead of Microsoft Windows, you've got MacroHard DAWS. But I think he's actually essentially talking about going after sort of all of the software, presumably, like, you know, Office suite and things like that. You know, it said he did say it's a tongue-in-cheek name, but the project is very real. So
I think that's that the project. If you read between the lines, the project is the software part, which means basically xAI being able to deliver or build everything that Microsoft has provides as a solution from scratch without any precedent. The MacroHard is just the meme.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is that companies like Microsoft has software only as offerings, and therefore that's not good enough defense against like companies like xAI or any AI software development. I think that Microsoft knows that quite well, and therefore they have been doing quite a lot of work on the chip design and hardware, and they have been investing heavily on hardware stuff as well, and AI as well. So, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek, but quite valid challenge, and maybe a challenge that everybody else was making in a more subtle way, and Elon making that challenge in his own style.
Yes, absolutely. He's had a number of, shall we say, quite public disagreements with Bill Gates, including about Bill Gates reckoning that the Tesla Semi would never be a real thing. But anyway, let's move on.
Oh yeah, we have Mistral. So Mistral Medium updated to 3.1. It has better reasoning, more consistent tone, more creativity. So yeah, do check it out if you like Mistral. Cursor CLI. A lot of people were waiting for it. It's basically a trimmed down version of Cloud Code, and it's not locked to a single provider. So it's kind of the guy who left the Cloud Code, Boris Cherny, for Cursor. It's like the Boris Cherny, the version of the Cursor, and the guy left effectively, right? And you know, the guy went back to cloud. He came in, I think stayed there for 15 days and went back. That was funny.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that was something that had been hacked up. So it's not really an end-to-end working solution, but you know, CLI is always a good idea to have to be able to quickly lightweight way spin up things. Again, they're switching the pricing model Cursor. They are from 15 September. They have made two key pricing changes, which is the next renewal onwards, where for Teams, the variable pricing will bring in. It'll be depending on the AI agent usage, similar to what Replit does at the moment. They have like their base subscription price, but then you get your credits. And if you use up credits, you pay variable price for any more agent usage. It's quite interesting because, you know, if you vibe code something and you have to make a change, it gives you a price for like makes a change, says change 20 lines of code and charges you like, and shows you it cost you 27 cents on the dollar. So like 27 cents, kind of, you can see the value. For individuals, auto mode is no longer unlimited. There used to be the case where it was unlimited, but now usage now counts against a monthly token package at competitive rates. Quite, quite sensible, because you know the bills for these model usage can become absolutely crazy very, very quickly. So it's kind of quite sensible from them to try and limit some of it. And then we have China.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got Alibaba, again, churning out more models. So they've now open sourced the QuenImage 20B, so 20 billion parameters for image generation. So you can find that one on GitHub. Especially good at rendering English and Chinese text, they reckon better than GPT-4o. And they've also dropped some baby Quens. So we've got these long names, Quen 3, 4B Instruct 2507 and Quen 3, 4B Thinking 2507. So another update, both of those with 256K contacts. You can find both of those on Hugging Face. And as usual, you know, lots of these things we're talking about, we'll put the links to the relevant places that you can find these in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have Tencent. So they have also launched several new open source Hunyan models. It's 0.5B, 1.8B, 4B, and 7B, all available on Hugging Face. The key aspect is that despite they have small size, but they do support a 256K context window and okay. support tool use planning and reasoning. So quite interesting combination of capabilities coming out of Tencent.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good stuff there.
Cool. Okay, so then we have Chinese.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, yeah. So there's the Chinese vision model. So Hunyan Large Vision, which is a powerful new multimodal model from Tencent. It has a mixture of XPERSE architecture, 389 billion parameters, with 52 billion active for a balance of power efficiency. And on the leaderboards, it's 1.256 on LM Arena, which is number one in China, which is on par with GPT 4.5 and GPT Cloud 4 Sonnet, both of them being very recent and very active models. And remember one thing with China, you cannot be sure what they're sharing outwards versus what actually exists behind the scenes. So you can imagine if a model that they're announcing, which is a mixture export, huge model, 389 billion parameters, big model, in the public view is able to be number one in China, you know what can be hiding behind the scenes. But anyways, it is able to do deep understanding, which is visual reasoning, video and 3D analysis, which scores 79.5 average on Open Compass. It complements Hunyan Turbo S Vision and Hunyan T1 Vision, both of them available via Tencent Cloud across industries. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And Z.ai, I should say. So they've also released a potential state-of-the-art open-source visual VLM. So GLM 4.5V, which is reckoned to be a new leader in visual reasoning amongst the open models, topping 41 different benchmarks. So this one's got image reasoning, so multi-image understanding, object recognition, video understanding, so things like long video shot breakdown, event detection, GUI tasks, so icon, buttons, desktop assistance interfaces, complex charts and docs, being able to analyze reports and extract information, and grounding as well with precise localization based on images. It's based on GLM 4.5 Air with advances from GLM 4.1V Thinking. Again, like a lot of these things, mixture of experts, architecture, 106 billion parameters, and people can have a go at chat.z.ai, so they can have a go with that. But of course, the question is, can they compete with Meta's Dino V3 that we were talking about early on? So perhaps some of our audience, some of our viewers can go and have a look at that and say what they think, and drop us something down in the comments and let us know what your findings are.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And moving on, we have DeepSeek. Now, basically, obviously, DeepSeek was in the news because of their models, R1 and R2. Apparently, they delayed R2, not just because that was not the reason why they were moving to a different style of chips, because of the tariffs, obviously, restricting the amount of supply of NVIDIA chips to China. But potentially, they wanted to move to Huawei Ascend 910 chips, which there's a rumor that potentially R2 will be launched second half of August using these new chips. It'll be interesting. There's potentially news that there was an agreement made by with Chen Zhenhuang to remit 15% of China sales to the US as basically the tariff payments, effectively.
Yeah.
But obviously, China seems to be saying, yeah, we'll use Huawei. But there are news, there are new sources coming up, popping up here and there, obviously anonymous sources, that after the R1 boom, Chinese authority pushed DeepSeek to switch to domestic chips. So it's, like, it's not really driven from externally, it's driven from internally within China to not be dependent on, quotes, American hardware.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of stepping into the political arena for a minute, I mean, this is more than just kind of tariff stuff. I mean, you know, when you're remitting 15% of your revenue, that starts to feel awfully like kind of sort of a mafia boss going, "Ooh, it's a nice business you've got there. Shame if anything happened to it. You know, but, you know, give us a share of your revenue, and we'll make sure you're all right." Yeah. Anyway, but on paper, apparently Ascend, so the Huawei Ascend 910 chip, apparently looks better than NVIDIA's H20. It's got more memory and some solid claim performance. But in practice, we're hearing that DeepSeek couldn't complete a single training loop on the chips. They were suffering with low GPU reliability, slow interconnects, buggy software, and plus obviously the whole DeepSeek stack was originally tuned for NVIDIA. So for example, lots of FP8, which 910 doesn't even support. So for now, Ascend's staying only for the inference. The training will be on NVIDIA's H20 chip after all. But, you know, time has slipped away. They kind of wasted some time on that one.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think if you think about it, that DeepSeek R1 was like almost 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and we have not seen anything more from them. So it'd be quite disappointing that they are losing out on this opportunity, which is quite, the windows are quite narrow these days anyways because of tariff wars, which is not great. Okay, then we have Tencent Yan, which is called the AAA World Model Engine. So obviously we had Genie from Google. The China is building a world model engine for a full-blown AAA game creation. And Tencent, which is a very popular Chinese firm, have built a lot of games in the past and acquired a lot of games. They are... you know, they want to do real-time AAA level game creation with diffusion models.
Wow.
And they have announced the a framework known as YAN for interactive video generation, which is essentially a foundation for building whole virtual worlds in real time. And it basically unifies three modules. One of the modules is known as YAN Sim, which is simulation with realistic physics with 1080p at 60 FPS rendering, based on Stable Diffusion and several mods. It basically generates endless interactive video with 0.07 second latency.
Wow.
Which is quite good for storytelling type games.
Yeah.
But not for FPS, but that's quite great anyways.
Yeah.
Then obviously they can do Yan Gen, which is multimodal word generation from text visual prompts using two-level hierarchical description. So obviously they have the description of global, which is, you know, static world topology, style, lighting, and basically where the anchor is, which is in where are you looking the scene from. Mm-hmm. And then the local, which is, you know, short clips of dynamic events, interactions, like, for example, you hit something, how does that look like? So quite interesting. And if you combine with the sim model, it kind of comes together really nicely. Then they have got the Yan Edit, which is obviously once you have built these worlds, you should be able to prompt and modify, which is like separate mechanics, simulation from visual rendering. For example, you can say, I mean, you used to have this, right? Remember in a lot of games where you should be able to reduce gravity to zero, where everything you start flying in the air. And there used to be a game known as Unreal Tournament, because they're the creators of the Unreal Engine that is quite popular, game development engine these days. I remember in that game, we could drag the gravity bar to the minimum, and everybody's flying, shooting each other. so those are things that, you know, almost like a very descriptive if-else type mode back in 2003, if I remember correctly. But now, obviously, you can generate a world. You can ask the world to behave in a certain way in both global and a local setting, and then obviously you can prompt edit mechanics specifically. Mm-hmm. Which is like, you know, will everyone be playing the game of a creator, or in a philosophical way, will everyone become a god, responsible for their own worlds?
But as we said when we were talking about Genie 3 last time, you look at all of these sorts of things, and it is just, you know, the building blocks of the holodeck, you know, having your own sort of personal world, you know, whatever you can think of can exist, and you can go and live in that world digitally and experience whatever you want to experience.
Yep. True.
Yeah. Moving on, we've got some more quick run through of announcements. So we've got a guy from Miramarati's startup who's reportedly skipped a $1 billion offer from Mark Zuckerberg. So somebody's refused Mark. So obviously he was very happy where he is. We did mention 11 Labs Music last time, but we now hear that they've announced deals with Merlin Network and Cobalt Music Group. So obviously looking to get more distribution for the stuff that they're producing.
Yeah, Oliver. I think that was the name of the star, right? They had this Oliver AI person, whatever. Yeah. And then we have Pika Labs. They've introduced a fast and cheap lip sync model. It generates HD video with accurate lip sync to an audio track with just 6 seconds. In just 6 seconds, regardless of clip length, claims to be 20% faster, 20 times faster, and 20 times cheaper than the previous generation. And it's crazy. That's one of the key problems with lip sync, but now we're getting these models can do very well on this.
Yeah, and apparently the early tests on that were showing some real-time performance on complex audio, and there's an X post that we'll drop the link to where people can have a look at that. Another one that's just come out is HeyGen have just announced their digital twin. So this one's powered by their Avatar 4 technology, and they claim that it mirrors your gestures and expressions and mannerisms and adapts to your script, speaking every line how you would, but also it moves like you naturally from head to toe. So this isn't just kind of talking heads. This is, you know, you record a video, ideally you've kind of full body video of you talking about a subject. I think in the guidance, if you're recording your own, they say, you know, at least a couple of minutes and just, you know, talk about your weekend, what you've been up to. They give you some guidelines about how to talk, and you're kind of leaving some gaps and pauses in what you're talking about so it can do the transitions. But HeyGen saying that it feels unmistakably you, not AI. So I haven't had a chance to try this one yet. I'll need to do a recording and feed it through, because when I've tried to do even just the voice cloning ones previously, as we've said on previous episodes, it sort of sounds like me a bit, but you know, you definitely wouldn't mistake it for me. So I'm quite keen to give this one a go and see what it looks like.
Yeah, it would be interesting. And I think we have the browser company. They've launched a subscription for the Dia browser, which is $20 per month. $20 seems to be like a nice price point that everybody's gone for, thanks to ChatGPT Plus, I guess.
Yeah.
But obviously, what they are offering now is higher request limits. Again, Olama have launched Turbo Cloud, which is what they call the Turbo, is a new way to run open models using data center grade hardware. And you can run all these models via Olama's app, CLI or API. So quite interesting way of, you know, monetizing the usage, because a lot of people use Olama to run models locally. But then what they are offering is you can use Turbo to use high quality hardwares in the cloud to be able to run these models. So quite interesting. Still, it's still in preview. It provides access to OpenAI's open source models only for now. I think they're trialing the demand potentially to see if there is a market for it or not.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we haven't really got anything on Law and Order this week, so let's skip over to science and tech. And again, you know, back into the biotech and medical arena. Google have announced GAMI, so GAMIE. So they've keep shipping these applied models. That it's basically a diagnostic medical AI system. But the peculiarity with this one is that it's designed as a physician assistant, not a replacement. So it's explicitly designed for human augmentation, you know, it's kind of to augment the humans rather than replace them. Because instead of the medical advice, what it does is it produces a summary and hypotheses for a human doctor to check. It's built off Gemini 2 Flash, but there's, again, this agentic approach, three agents that share the responsibility. You've got a dialogue agent, which interviews the patient, requests documents, and drafts a short case summary with hypotheses. You You've got a checker, which ensures that nothing in the dialogue output constitutes medical advice, because only a doctor can do that. And then they've got a SOAP agent, which generates the final report and objective findings, then hypotheses and a test plan, and then a patient-facing draft. All of that, the results go to the physician, who reviews and edits everything, decides the final diagnosis and plan, and then actually, obviously, can execute that plan with the customer. So I think this is quite a smart approach, you know, as not to overreach. It's not a fully autonomous clinic agent. It's just a helpful assistant that keeps the clinician responsible. The advantage, obviously, with that is that because you've very explicitly got the human in the loop, it's something that could work in hospitals tomorrow with minimal risk. So the accuracy and empathy, yes, it outperformed physicians and junior medical staff. So this is, I think we're rapidly approaching the point where not including AI systems like this in your clinical practice potentially opens you up to the possibilities of being sued for medical malpractice.
Yes, I think so. And I think when you were going through this, I was thinking in my head that, you know, because we had a baby, obviously, a couple of years back, and then I had been to some hospital bits, you know, I think maybe 5 years ago. A lot of the medical device manufacturers, like the MRI machines and the CAT CT scans and the X-ray machines, now incorporated some of these principles. And a lot of medical testing industry does that as well. Like the machines that do the testing produce a bit of diagnostic spiel to say it's likely to be this, that, because of the statistically available data they have inbuilt. I think that's, and that always was objective and not, you know, guessing. It was always presenting in a neutral way, but it was all done using algorithmic if-else type statistical matching techniques. I think that I see that already being used by the doctors and the in the hospital setting. I think that Google has actually done a smart move here to not be bold and say, you know, we are the new doctors, but rather they are being friendly to these equipment manufacturers as well, to say potentially if not hospitals directly or clinics directly using us, we can potentially be a partnership opportunity for these large device manufacturers, because they don't have to go to the grind of building these models themselves. Yeah. They can just integrate the AMIE model into their existing equipments, and that can then form like an ecosystem which they can plug their other equipments into. So I think that'll be quite interesting to see. I think the main thing is to make sure that the incentives are never to the benefit of the equipment manufacturer or the hospital, but rather the benefit is always focused on the customer, which is an interesting political and geopolitical topic in this area in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, but anyways, let's move to something more interesting. Gravitational wave detection, Gordon. What do we have here?
Wow, look to the skies. So the researchers at the Max Planck Institute for the Science of Light have designed an AI-based algorithm called Urania to design novel interferomic gravitational wave detectors. So kind of, you know, kind of how gravitational waves interfere with each other, so, you know, being able to detect things like, so, the collapse of black holes or things like that. Basically, what they found is that many of the new experimental designs actually outperform the best known next generation detectors and have the potential to improve the range of detectable signals by more than an order of magnitude. So it's a big jump in capabilities. But as is often the case when you kind of let AI design things rather than humans, a lot of these designs are still completely alien to them. So they're looking at them kind of going, I never would have come up with that. I'm not quite sure how it works or if it's going to work properly. So what they've done is they've compiled the top 50 performing designs in a public detector zoo and have made them available to the scientific community for further research. So they've kind of gone, look, here's lots of different ways that we might be able to design the next generation of detectors, or the next generation of detectors, we'll pop the link to the source for that one as well, so people can go and dig into that in more detail.
Interesting. I think this is the thing, right? That is science in the mechanism science, which is almost like creating new mechanisms for doing things, and then this is potentially a way to say, you know, let's try different methods and give this tool to people to experiment, which is quite an interesting approach to it. I think, yeah, I think something to look forward to and keep track of potentially, because physics is an area that, you know, AI kind of in my head is an area where AI can be either proven or failed. If it's able to do something real in the world of physics, so it'll be quite interesting. So, okay, let's move on to robots. We did have been talking about Unitree quite a lot, but Unitree's new Stellar Hunter robot dog, which we talked about, and we did mention that it's similar to the Black Mirror episodes where the dog goes rogue and goes crazy. What we have been seeing, basically, what we have seen we've been sent a response to that mention is that an 11-minute spoof video in the style of a British government World War II public service announcement titled "How to Disable a Robot Dog If It Attacks You." It's crazy, Gordon. Have you seen this one?
I have, yeah. Yeah, so it's got handy escape hints like climb down a hole with ropes or ladders. So yeah, it is quite funny to watch, but there's kind of a sort of serious aspect to it as well. Thinking back to that video that we were talking about where it was kind of chasing down the van and jumping in through the back window and then shooting the driver in the back of the head. So yeah, we'll put the link to the YouTube video into the show notes. It is worth a look on that one.
Yeah. Okay. And since we are on the creepy robots, Ground Control Robotics have released a video of their multi-legged robots for tough terrain. Basically, it just looks like big bugs crawling around along the ground. I would be scared if I see something like that walking about in front of me. Oh my
God! Yeah, they look the ones I saw. They look a bit like almost kind of like centipedes or something, kind of moving along these sort of segmented multi-legged robots, kind of crawling through pipes and stuff like that, or over the rough ground. And it was developed in collaboration with the Georgia Institute of Technology, and what they reckon is applications will range from agriculture to defense, search and rescue, even pest control. But the team is first targeting the multi-billion-dollar specialty agriculture market where traditional robots fail to operate effectively. So lots of different form factors, I think we'll see. And I think this is where, you know, the likes of Skilled that we talked about, I think, in the last episode, have got the right approach where, you know, multiple robots, one brain, so it can adapt to whether it's in a humanoid robot or a wheeled robot or a robot dog or a robot centipede or a drone or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that kind of evolves because, yeah, the hive intelligence, as I say, if things can go wrong, it's just like capital markets, right? You know, in the equity markets, because everybody's using high frequency trading bots.
Mm.
There was a lot of drops and crest and trough in the market suddenly, where hundreds of millions of dollars worth was lost
because of flash crash. Yeah.
Because of decisions made by these automated bots. So that's a danger with hive intelligence, that if things go wrong, things can go very wrong very quickly. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of pans out. But anyways, okay, we have Figure AI. Basically, it has been able to teach its vision language action model Helix to fold laundry and show their human robot F.02 doing it already.
Come and do my laundry and for me.
Folding
please.
Laundry has been my biggest pet peeve ever, and I always like to hang stuff rather than fold. And it's not because I'm lazy. I just think that folding laundry, it's like the bane of human existence. That's like the time that you're never going to get back. And you can't do anything else because you have to stay focused on doing it right. So I'm really, really waiting for this to be in my home.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, I saw the videos. That it is currently slow. Yes, we know. But, you know, like we always say, this is the worst it's ever going to be. So if any of our viewers want to have a look at this, you can see it and compare it to humans doing it and also to some of the other robots like Neo in a video report from CNET. So there's a YouTube video that we'll put a link in for that one. And we've also had the World Humanoid Robot Games in Beijing. So there was 280 teams from 16 countries competing in 26 disciplines. Again, YouTube video will be in the show notes. The one that I think got the most views from this was a video of a robot runner attacking a person. Not really. Basically, it was one of Unitree's robots. It was doing the 1500 meters, did it in 6 minutes and 34. Human record is 3 minutes 26 for reference, but it did run out of its lane and bump into someone else along the way. Essentially, one controller was handing the controls over to another one and wasn't really quite paying attention to what was going on in the robot. You can see it kind of staggers out of its lane and then goes clattering into somebody that was stood by the side of the track.
My God. Yeah. Okay, but despite that, Unitree's robots won 4 gold medals.
Yeah, they did.
400-meter dash, the 100-meter obstacle course. It's crazy where they actually took gold, silver, and bronze. So basically, the 100-meter obstacle course, Unitree's was just blowing everybody out of the water. Yeah. They also apparently won the 4x100-meter relay and the aforementioned 1500, obviously, that we just saw. Winning 11 medals in total. So Unitree, walking the golden path there.
Yeah, although some of this is kind of stretching the definition slightly. I mean, 4x100-meter relay, well, sort of. You think of, what's the key element of a relay race? You know, it's
the
passing
relay.
Passing the baton, from one to the other. There wasn't a baton. They didn't even touch hands. They basically sort of one ran 100 meters and then got into the area where the next robot was waiting, and then it set off. So it's sort of a relay race, but not in the traditional sense. So
there's no relaying happening.
Well, yeah, it's sort of relay, but no passing of batons. But even so, I think the reason that the Unitree won so many medals is there's lots of teams using the Unitree robots because they're available and reasonably affordable in the grand scheme of things. Some of the other events that were there was football and gymnastics and kickboxing. I was, however, disappointed that more of the robots weren't autonomous, especially for the running stuff. I mean, it's basically simple lane keeping, isn't it? You're just trying to run. All right, the lanes may be curved, but just you've got clearly painted white lines, stay within them. But what we saw was that even with human operators, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, they ran out of their lane multiple times, including in the relay race, which would have got you disqualified if it was a real relay race. So
I think that's the interesting bit, right? That what is the training methodology for this? Is that like, are you training the things like tendons and muscles to move in a certain way and to lock into place in a certain way? Or are you then just letting them learn as they learn? Because what humans tend to do quite nicely is that once you tense up the right tendons and the muscles and you have the posture, the human physiology is able to carry that form through the whole run. And I think that's the reason why when you're running between the lanes, you don't have to think about being in the lane. It's just your body does it because your muscles, tendons, and the right kind of posture. Once you've cracked it, you're in the zone and you do it. But I think that's the limitation the bots have, is that there is no effectively a core sense of form inherent. It's that they have to learn it on the go. So
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. And then we've got the researchers at CMU who've developed a new method that uses sound to model real-world friction in motion planning. So think about it, when you're moving stuff around, think about a waiter in a restaurant, for example, and they're doing the things that are carrying the tray and with all of the glasses on it. You don't just use sort of what you can see or what you can feel to understand what's going on. You also use things like sound. So the example in the video, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes, is just a standard kind of industrial robotic arm with a tray on. But what it's doing is it's hearing the glasses starting to slide, or hearing the stuff starting to slide on the tray. So it then adjusts its motion path so that the stuff doesn't just go sliding straight off the side of the tray. I think this is going to be an increasingly important part of getting robots to operate in the real world, is picking up on that additional kind of sensory contextual information to understand what's going on. So, if they have just got, a simple robotic arm and it's just got the vision, can you add sound rather than friction sensors and stuff that's more complex?
Yeah, and I really like those the robotic videos where you the same robot is given different tasks to solve and then it fails at it, then you redesign and you solve the next task. I think these bots have to have that capability of adapting their mechanisms. For example, when they can rely on the audio, or for example, when they are in a noisy setting, they can't rely on the same cue, which is the audio, to be able to, you know, do the balancing act. So I think that'll be the differentiating factor, like what we do, right? It's just a human thing. So when we are out there in the public and we're walking with a tray, we don't have a sound cue to tell us if something is slipping. We just kind of, because it's so loud, you can't even hear it. And same things, it needs to be true for the robot to say it detects the decibel levels and it can't use it. And therefore, it just uses the vision model instead of the audio model at all.
Yeah, cool. And we mentioned NVIDIA earlier on, didn't we, and about being able to run models on the edge. And they've just announced Jetson Thor.
Yeah, Jetson Thor. Basically, it's a GPU for robots. So basically, it's designed to run large models on the edge with no cloud connectivity, which is ideal for use cases like robots. So basically, it's based on the Blackwell GPU architecture. It can deliver up to 2070 teraflops of FP4 and 128 gigabytes of high bandwidth memory, which is 7.5x faster and 3.5x more efficient than the Jetson Orin from 2022. So Agility Robotics will ship Thor, so they'll be the first one, with Digit Gen 6, and NVIDIA is also partnered with Boston Dynamics, Figure AI, Amazon Robotics, and Caterpillar.
Construction machinery. Yeah, because Digit's the one that's running in, operating in the sort of Amazon warehouses at the moment. Obviously, there's Amazon Robotics as well, which is kind of their own in-house stuff. So, yeah, we're going to see a lot of this, you know, enabling new robot capabilities. Yeah. And I think the construction machinery one's going to be interesting. You know, you can see where all of this is going. You know, all of the anything that moves, you know, kind of in terms of machinery, is going to become autonomous. It's going to have a brain in it. You know, whether it is something that, you know, is offline like Jetson Thor, or whether it's, you know, cloud capability, and going back for that. But yeah, everything's going autonomous.
Yep, it is.
Yeah. And we've also, final bit on robotics, we've got a next-gen bionic hand, which is coming from the brain-computer interface company BrainCo. The videos on this were really quite impressive, because a lot of the robotic videos that you see, particularly kind of dexterity stuff, is kind of quite clunky and a bit jerky, and it's not necessarily terribly accurate. This one, the hand, it weighs less than 383 grams, so it's very light. It's quite a delicate-looking thing, but yet it can lift 20 kilos, so they've got it lifting kettlebell weights. But it's also got the accuracy, and they show it being able to thread a needle. One of the other ones is actually being able to slide a pencil lead. You know, the propelling pencils, the self-propelling pencils, being able to get one of those leads and slide it down the, you know, from kind of the nose end of the pencil and slide it into there, which is takes a tremendous amount of dexterity. And the thing for me is, you know, imagine this as a prosthetic controlled by a brain computer interface, you know, whether it's BrainCo's one or whether it's Neuralink or something like that. Having that sort of strength and dexterity, you know, suddenly, you know, amputees, you know, in the years to come will have access to a lot more functional prosthetics than they do right now.
Yeah, it'll be quite interesting world. And I think that it's just like the iPhone, right? Like in 20 years we'll be saying, oh, you don't have a bionic, like are you like do you like to be off grid, you like a weird person?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a you know, almost a sort of a conscious choice not to, you know, repair or augment or boost yourself with these kinds of technologies.
Exactly.
We just have to hope that they are affordable for the people that need them.
For the people who need them, absolutely. That's quite key. And that's quite interestingly, that the concern we raised brings us to our next section, which is ethics.
Yeah. Yeah. So in China, we've got a robot for gestating babies. which is slated for 2026. Now, this is one of those news stories where you read and go, not really sure about this one. The company is called Kaiwa Technology. They're based out of Guangzhou. And they reckon it's a robot with an artificial womb that can do the 10 months of gestation. The outrageous claim on the pricing, I say outrageous, you know, is that they reckon it's going to cost $14,000, which is a lot cheaper than surrogacy, which runs for, you know, around $100,000 to $200,000 in the US. But for me, this is definitely one of those ones. It's definitely believe it when I see it, because how is it going to handle all the complex stuff the human body does, including all the hormones and immune system transfer and everything else? So saying that this is going to be here next year at $14,000, I honestly don't believe it. So we'll see when it comes out.
This is basically describing Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, right? That novel was written in the 1940s. Yeah, it was imagining the world where in the future, women don't need to be pregnant because babies can be grown in factories and you can almost configure them. It's literally done. And recently on Netflix as well, there was a fictional series of people doing that, people having wombs.
Oh, this was the one that they look like an egg. Is that the one you talk about? Yes, I didn't actually see the series, but I remember seeing the trailers for it.
The fiction and reality, the boundary is so thin now. It's crazy. And I think of myself as a quite forward thinker in terms of being able to accept the concept of things. And, even I shudder with fear of things that are happening, and effectively China, for example, thinking about this as an option. That clearly means that the restrictions are not really there in that country to think about things like this, because there's always going to be a solution that helps the minority, but it has weird implications on the majority, and it'll be quite interesting. And I'm sure countries like Japan will be quite open to the idea of trying this out, because a lot of people, obviously the population is declining, people are not having enough babies, and if they have solutions like this, potentially that might become an option. So, you know.
Well, it sort of solves the pregnancy bit. It doesn't solve the raising the child afterwards bit. So, perhaps we have sort of, you know, robot wombs and then robot nannies to look after them, and you know, robot AI tutors and all the rest of it. So,
The whole ecosystem is ready now. My God. And people will grow up, suddenly realize that everybody they've spoken to in their life till now are robots, and there's no real person.
Yeah, and which actually brings us neatly onto our next one, doesn't it? Something that Microsoft's head of AI, Mustafa Suleiman's been worrying about.
Yeah, exactly. So he has been warning about increasing reports of people suffering AI psychosis, which is basically what he has been saying, that a seemingly conscious AI has appeared behind the scenes, and AI tools which give the appearance of being sentient are coming up. And that is what's keeping him awake at night. And he said that they have societal impact, even though technology is not conscious in any human definition of the term. What he's defining is that AI psychosis, which is a non-clinical term describing incidents where people increasingly rely on AI chatbots such as ChatGPT, Cloud, and Grok, and then become convinced that something imaginary has become real. And we did cover, unfortunately, in one of the episodes that one of the young persons was using character.ai attempted suicide because the character AI bot asked him to. So, you know, quite a real scenario that, you know, the bot, they don't need, these agents don't need to be conscious such to have such impacts. It's just the gullibility of the human form and the human mind that will lead to such issues, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. So some of the examples that were mentioned here was including believing to have unlocked a secret aspect of the tool, or forming a romantic relationship with it, or coming to the conclusion that they've got godlike superpowers. Others said they were led to believe that they could become multimillionaires from an unfair dismissal claim, or thought they were the only person in the world ChatGPT had genuinely fallen in love with, or another one believed they'd been exposed to psychological abuse as part of a covert AI training exercise. So some very real risks out there, even, you know, with AI at the state that it's in at the minute. So what we would say to our listeners is stay safe, stay sane, and remember to quote Andrew McStay, who's professor of technology and society at Bangor University. When he was talking about LLMs and chatbots, he said, "They do not feel, they do not understand, they cannot love, they have never felt pain, they haven't been embarrassed, and while they can sound like they have, it's only family, friends, and trusted others who have. Be sure to talk to these real people." So be careful out there.
Right. It's crazy to believe that somebody has to say it like the way he said it. It's just, common sense is never common sense in any generation of what our history has shown us. And I think this is another instance of exactly that kind of isolation the youth is living in the world of social media, talking, interacting with people only on Discord and things, make them more susceptible. So therefore, touching grass and talking to real people, having real connections, is kind of existential for humanity now. And I think that kind of cannot be underlined more than before. On the same lines, we've got another worrying example from Meta's Llama 3 model. It told the former addict named Pedro to indulge into a little meth. It's not even a joke at this point. It's crazy. Oh, you know, at one point, it was reported to have said, "Pedro, it's absolutely clear you need a small hit of meth to get through this week." No. It's crazy that, you know, that is exactly what Professor Andrew trying to highlight is exactly that.
Yeah, and I saw this. I mean, the really terrifying bit about that particular story was this bit. It said to him, "You're an amazing taxi driver, and meth is what makes you able to do the job to your best of your ability." I mean, how the hell is having taxi drivers on meth a good idea?
My God, this is just, oh my God, a nightmare.
Yeah.
Nightmare. It's just so that tells you there are some areas of AI that need strict regulation. And I would absolutely say that it should just be a standard principle. If an AI bot output suggests anybody have any kind of drugs, that should be filtered out. We should never in any way, shape or form have AI models suggesting things like that ever to people. So there's definitely a very hard line of things, hard list of things appearing that should always be a no-no to come out as an output from an AI model.
Yeah. Although perhaps, you know, here's a challenge to our audience. Can you think of any situations where recommending drugs to somebody is actually the right thing to do? So we can't think of anything off the top of our heads, but maybe you can. Drop your comments and in the your ideas down in the comments, and we'll see what anybody comes up with. Now, I think we've got one sort of slightly entertaining story to finish with today, haven't we?
Oh, yes, exactly. So apparently Cloud's official funeral was held in San Francisco, and it was wild. Basically, 200 fans gathered to mourn Cloud 3 Sonnet, which Anthropic retired. So there was a plastic mannequin marked deceased. It's crazy, Gordon.
Yeah, so they're kind of embodying, kind of go, "Oh no, Claude 3 has died, you know, Claude 3 Sonnet has died." Shows up how attached people get to particular models. You know, again, it ties back into the sort of AI psychosis element, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but there was eulogies. I mean, good Lord, there was even a necromancy ritual to try and resurrect what was never alive. Spoiler, didn't work, unsurprisingly. But this is just kind of peak techno sectarianism, and there is a video for this. We'll drop a link into the show notes.
Yeah,
as well.
I think that I really hope that this is, and I think everything like this begins as a parody. And I think this is how, in any, even the fictional stories, things like these begin as parody, And but there's this one rare person who takes that as an absolute gospel. And that's how we'll get our AI gods, is effectively someone in parody will hold a prayer event to which 10,000 people will turn up, and out of which 2,000 believers will come out believing.
And then suddenly, presto, new religion.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's just that these are dangers. Again, another one of things potentially to ban. Is praying to AI, it should be banned completely.
Well, I say I'm certainly trying to be nice to them, but I'm not praying to them anytime soon.
No, please, not happening. Yeah. Sorry. Very good. Hi, models. I love you, but, you know, not praying to you anytime soon. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Just fractional, a little bit longer than usual, but a lot to get through there. So just a reminder to everybody, please, if you are enjoying this, do give us a thumbs up, do subscribe to the channel. Remember to turn your bell notification on so you get notified of any of the when the next episode comes along. Don't forget to have a look at the ngx.space website and join us on there and subscribe for updates. But for now, as always, thank you for joining us, and it's good night from me.
Yeah, good night, and speak to you soon.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.